knew that you had been to a Paul show if you came to one of our shows. And to the same extent, you knew that you'd been to a Sin City show or a Joe Worker show because it was about drinking and getting beat up and banging your head and just sort of being in love with that sort of place and time in your life. I can remember going out to the Outhouse. I saw so many great bands at the Outhouse. Skin Yard on their Thousand Smiling Knuckle tours. Nice Strong Arm, Life Sentence, The Circle Jerks, Ice-T's band. You'd go out there, and the only reason why you went out there was to get into a pit and like be sort of mashed against the music and these other people who wanted to be mashed against the music. It was violent, and there were bad aspects to it, but there was also a lot of joy.
I think at some point, slam dancing went by the wayside.
Yeah, I think so too. And you know what? That's probably for the better. Although, I will say this for the Kansas City or the Kansas scene. I can remember when people went down to the Outhouse, particularly, somebody picked you up. They weren't there to put a boot in your dental work as much as they were to just, they wanted to enjoy and suck the marrow out of this sort of heavy musical experience. You don't have to be that close to Pantera to feel like you're going to want to punch something. And it doesn't necessarily mean out of anger, but it's out of this sort of bass note in your gut that just says, yeah, you know. And it's not bad that slam dancing has disappeared. But it was something that I did that I thoroughly enjoyed, and I have no regrets about. Although, to this day, I still carry certain scars from it.
I'm not sure if that comes through the podcasting audience, but he just popped out his two front teeth. So,
yeah.
That's what is that? What happened?
Well, when I was a kid, I ran into a truck with my face. And over the years, I just had stuff. The doctor shoved my real teeth back into the scabbing, trying to heal holes 4 hours later. Just pushed them, opened up my head and pushed them back into my holes. He pushed my teeth back into my teeth holes. And they stayed for a long time. And then, like, you know, after a certain amount of catching, you know, an elbow in the face or whatever, they just broke. So now I've got a little fake thing. It's good for this, for the nieces.
Okay, it's all right. It's okay. Go there.
I draw some eyes on the hand, and it's fantastic. Crowd surfing thing, man. There's something fantastic about seeing one, like an 18-year-old, 100-pound little girl go surfing across the top of like a bunch of shaved heads. And there's also something fantastic about, I was in places where I knew that not only if I jumped, they would support me, but they wanted me to jump. They wanted me to jump, and they wanted to pass me around, like you'd pass around, you know, like a picture of somebody that you thought was interesting. And I was more than happy to jump out there and fly around for a while, you know, and come back. It's an interesting experience.
Damn, man. Why couldn't I have, you know, been in the band in, like, 1992 and people wanted to crowd surf?
People don't crowd surf at all anymore?
No. I haven't seen it for, like, 10 years.
That's too bad, man. You ought to start a band and say, what I want to see is crowd surfing.
I think it had its time. I think
it's over, huh?
I think it's over.
Yeah, I tell you what, crowd surfing was fun. Man, Dragline was just, I mean, it was grunge rock. It was. I mean, that's what we did. That's what we listened to. That's what we wanted to do. I mean, Tad's record, Eight Way Santa, had a lot to do with why we chose to record in Madison in the first place, which led to the deal. But in terms of what we were doing artistically, yeah, I think I'm pretty pleased, most pleased with the last.
What else were you listening to at that time besides the Tad record?
You know, there's a couple records that I still look for, and I might have to go down to Love Garden when I'm here. You know Bolt La Volta? Have you ever heard Swan Dive? You should hear that, man. It's just an amazing record. Tad, Eight Way Santa, the Afghan Whigs, Up In It. The Soundgarden, Louder Than Love, Flower, just all that, you know, Alice in Chains. Then there was a lot of like metal, in terms of things like, not Sepultura, but Who Lives South of Heaven, Slayer, like things that you'd go out and you'd see the rock and roll, and it was more about the sort of, it was more about rock at the time than it was about, sort of now, we always liked classic rock, but we didn't go listen to the Eagles, you know. Although I guess you could say it was an influence to the 13-year-old version of the band or whatever at the time. And I still listen to Eight Way Santa with a tear in my eye because of how good it is. All my copies of that Bolt La Volta record are chewed up. But those are a couple of the ones. That Swan Dive is amazing. I need to find it.
What was your favorite Nirvana record?
Bleach, for sure, man.
Yeah.
I can remember the first time. We did school, you know, because the first time I heard him say, won't you believe it, it's just my luck, no recess. There was a sort of a moment of shock where you're like, what the hell is this guy talking about? And that was before you knew what they looked like or they did or anything like that. That record was, it was one of the records where you'd put in the car and then a fist fight would break out in the car just because all the guys were, you know, woo woo. yeah, that's my favorite. Almost 10 years, but there's a period of a couple years where there was this density and intensity to my life where It was all the cliches that you can imagine when you throw in rock singing, but also there was a sort of hard-edged, crazy, desperate beauty about the whole thing too. Like, I can remember, you know, you went from the van to the bar to the hotel to the van to the bar to the hotel. When you do that for a period of years and you pretty much are insane it to begin with, there were just times where I can remember looking around me and thinking, is this a dream? What is going on, man? And those types of experiences have been wonderful in terms of informing my appreciation for now what I hope to have is sort of a more normal life. Change the pain of what you feel. You keep it inside. You made it real. 20 times to get it. 20 times to get it. You kept it inside long enough, enough to let it. When I came down to Lawrence, it, first of all, it was about half the size. It was definitely a hippie town. One of my first summers out here, or whenever they held it, I went to the Omega Festival, which was kind of a pre-runner to a lot of these hippie fests where you go and put up a tent and sleep face down in a pool full of cold beer with a fire outside, you know, for 3 days. And the music was geared towards jam bands. And there were good jam bands. I mean, the Mahouts and the Frog Band, and I was in Vegas recently and saw Buffy, and she was in a good band too. I can't remember the exact name, but there were a bunch of good jazz bands, like jam bands. And then there was the sort of the dirty, nasty rock and roll. The dirty, nasty rock and roll was, to me, consisted of a couple specific bands, Sin City Disciples. I saw Sin City Disciples play. Do you know the Crossing?
Sure.
Up on campus?
Yeah, the frat bar.
Yeah. Is it a frat bar now?
Pretty much.
Is it? Yeah. I saw Sin City Disciples play. And it was one of those things where if you could draw a cartoon about it, there'd be people sticking out the windows and stuff. My buddy lived up the street at the time, and we polished off a couple bottles of whiskey and went down there, and I just remember it was that sort of Howling Wolf, but with this sort of dirty Chicago guitar stuff underneath. That to me was the most exciting thing I'd ever seen. I you know, you just danced your ass off and sweat, and it was beautiful. Joe Worker was definitely a fantastic, fantastic band. Those guys played rock and roll really well. Kill Whitey was fantastic, and I saw Kill Whitey more than Stick, but I also saw Stick and still send Mark Smurl the best. I believe he lives in Chicago now, above Waxman Candles, running a Waxman Candles up there. Even bands like Cocknoose, who we had antagonistic relationships with. When I see those guys now, I wave to them and we talk. It's friendly. I think that some of the other guys in the band with me were hard to get along with, as was I. I mean, no saying. One of the things about the rock and roll scene is that young drunk guys were the authors of it for the most part. And so you put these guys in a bar together, and sometimes they'd end up hugging each other and go out to the lake and, you know, firing shotguns in their boots at like empty beer bottles. And sometimes there'd be a fist fight. But it was vital, and it was alive, and it was exciting. Open mic night at the Bottleneck, you'd have to get a slot for the Bottleneck like a month in advance, because it would always be packed because there were always good bands. I still remember Magic Nose, Gavin's band, Touch Freak, some of those guys at Touch Freak. Not that they're from Lawrence, but I was friends with the guys in Season of Risk. There was a super cool, intelligent, dense rock that was coming out of Lawrence, you know, that wasn't grunge, although I think that we owed a lot of our success to the popularity of Sub Pop and Nirvana particularly. There was a scene, man, and it was exciting, and It was rock. It was a rock scene. It wasn't like in North Carolina. I don't know what it's like here, but in North Carolina, there's a lot of like the sort of weird electronic pop, like Stefan Sergeant Stevens or whatever, and and the Granddaddy guys, stuff I like, right? But where is the setting the stuff on fire? You know, I mean, like there was like it's a little bit more laid back. It's cool. You know, it's good songwriting. And maybe we weren't as much about good songwriting as we were about good shows, because we played great shows, man. People who, for particularly for young artists who are good and who want to make a living doing music because they're good at it and because they that it's a lifestyle that they enjoy and want to do and because they're in love with the music, major label means you get a chance to do that. It means they'll put your record in shops in Madison, Wisconsin, and Tampa, Florida, and Hong Kong and Tokyo, and but also, I will give this caveat to what I said. I was not a business guy. Had I been a business guy, I would have escaped from my time with the band with the more financial, I would have come away with some financial resources. If you are smart and have the opportunity, I don't think there's anything wrong with it. They're bleeding money and people and resources now. I don't know how. But to me, A&M was just, A&R meant at a restaurant. They just took us out and bought us food and helped us pay for videos and let us go to Germany, you know? I mean, so I'm not gonna say nothing bad about them because my life was impacted in a big way by them. And I don't know necessarily all the way positively, but at the same time, I'm very pleased with the experience that I had with them.